This is the 77 Debris Things. I am Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapon Specialist Zero.
Zero, how you doing this week?
A little bit exhausted from the work week, but Monday was a fun diversion with the eclipse and all.
We're here to comb the files of MI6 to discuss the cinematic adventures of one James Bond. This week, A View to a Kill, Zero. I was kind of excited about this movie because it had Christopher Walken in it. I don't know if you've seen a lot of his movies, but he's a damn good actor. What are your thoughts on Christopher Walken?
Yeah, mostly he has a great reputation. Just any movie he's in is usually pretty great because he's just got quite a presence.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I guess presence is the right word because it seems like whatever movies he's in, he just has a scene-stealing performance in it. The one that I remember now that is the most recent is... do you remember Catch Me If You Can? Have you seen that?
Have not.
Oh, you haven't seen that one. Okay. But even like the bad movies, or maybe like not the most memorable movies I think he's good in. The one movie that I remember with him that is not great, but is decent, but he's really good in is The Rundown. Do you remember that movie at all? Do you know what that movie is?
Unfortunately, I don't think I've seen that one either.
So, The Rundown is the movie that started Dwayne Johnson as to being an action star. It was after The Scorpion King, I think. And it was Dwayne Johnson, Sean William Scott, and Christopher Walken was the villain. And he just chewed scenery throughout the entire film. That was a decent movie. It was because of Walken in that movie. But anyway, now that we've got done splooging off Walken, let's get into our mission objectives. This is where we go through certain aspects of the film to discuss what were feelings of this film. So let's start with 007, which is James Bond, played by Roger Moore.
He seems to have a little bit more fun. There's more clever one-liners as usual. There is a little bit of action in this one, but I don't think it's too much that ends up kind of getting him out of his comfort zone. But I think he was fine in this one.
I had one fear in the last movie, which was that Moore, he starts acting like he's a little too old for the role, and he just missed it with the last one. In this movie, it was like, okay, no, he's too old now. One thing is the way he looks. He definitely looks a lot more aged, and it's getting a little distracting where he's starting to sleep with and flirt with younger women, where it's like, this is really weird. Why would these younger women be that attracted to him? This is odd. But the other thing that I started noticing is that the physical aspects of the character, he is not doing really well when it comes to the fight scenes. One key example I would have is the one under the stables where he's fighting those two henchmen with the conveyor belt. That looked really odd and off. To me, it was just like, whoa, he's definitely aged out. And this might be his worst as Bond, but mainly because I think that he's aged out of it, and at this point he should have just called it quits and moved on.
I can definitely see your counterpoints with things like him sleeping with some of the younger women. That's kind of off. And yeah, some of the combat scenes, while short in some cases, I will definitely concede to the fact that, yeah, it definitely looks like he's struggling with the choreography.
I do agree with you on a couple points, though. The comedic parts and everything seem fine, and the more charming parts he's okay with. The physical aspects and everything, I just think, is wildly off. All right, so let's move on to villains. We have two here, and we'll get to the first one, which is the main villain, which is Maximilian Zorin, played by Christopher Walken.
Zorin is just a psychopath through and through. The fact that he's kind of like a Nazi test tube baby.
Yeah.
I was just like, all right. We're going with the crazy, crazy sci-fi explainer plot on why he's psychotic. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
He kind of leans into psychopathy just brilliantly, in my opinion. It's not perfect, but like the moments where he is just purely psychotic, it really shows. Yeah. Like when he catches one of the Russians trying to like mess with one of his pumping stations, they clear the obstruction from Bond's oxygen tank, and then they get the pumps running again, and the Russian guy just got this look of, oh god, what are you gonna do with me? And then he just kind of gives the motion of, throw him in there, let him get chopped up into fish bait. I was like, yeah, he's really leaning into the psychopathy right there. Mm. It's definitely not perfect, but I mean, just, I think for a villain, he's entertaining, but definitely not one of Walken's most prominent performances. I thought he was fun, I thought he was all right, but it wasn't like something sort of earth-shattering from Christopher Walken's like career.
I think he plays Zorn as a complete cartoon character in this movie, and I think it's incredibly disappointing. Such a good actor as Walken play this character, and it's just utter cheese. At first, he's completely sharkish as a typical business mogul, but then, as you said, he just goes more and more into psychopathy. He goes more and more into cheesing up the entire movie with the way he is. Like, I can pinpoint the one point of the film where I was like, oh god, I hate this character so much. And it's when they get to San Francisco for the first time, and Mayday is like, oh, look at the view. And he's like, to a kill. I'm like, oh,
God. Yeah, that was corny. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh. It's kind of hard to really gauge whether this is just Walken being like, you know what? I know this is shit, so I'm just going to like ham it up to the nth degree. Or if this was just so poorly written that there was no other way that Walken could go in this. Because like, there's a point in the film where he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to kill everybody by just shooting everybody and destroying everything. I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? To me, Zorn is a third-rate Goldfinger. He's utilizing the same things that Goldfinger is, where he is a calculated and also ruthless, but he does it to such a degree that cannot be taken seriously at any point throughout the film. I think this is probably the worst villain that I have seen in any of the Bond films. And it's so disappointing because it's Walken who's playing this character. Utterly awful on my end. I hate this villain so much. I can understand why maybe some like him, because really goes into the cheese. I can't stand this one.
That's a fair counterpoint. I mean, it is a bit of a juxtaposition that, you know, he starts off kind of sharky, kind of the really shrewd and ruthless businessman, and then all of a sudden, hey, let me just turn on the psychopathy switch, just go full on murdering random people here and there, and just looking at a body count as a mere cost of doing business.
I guess in another light, it can be entertaining, but I could not stand this character at all.
I think the reason I kind of let it slide was just once I noticed that the movie started to slide into kind of the silliness, I was just like, all right, let me just turn my brain off for a little bit.
Sure. The other villain is Mayday, played by Grace Jones.
Thought she was all right. She has a sort of like a change of sides sort of moment, kind of like Jaws did in Moonraker towards the end, but it's just kind of like one of those sudden realizations that just Zorn wasn't the man he was cracked up to be, so it seems a little bit ham-fisted to sort of just make her change of heart happen right then and there, but I get it. It's not great, but, you know, just maybe this was the only way to kind of make that plot point make sense.
Yeah, that didn't make much sense either, because it didn't really feel like a romance between Zorin and her. It just felt like kind of a kinky kind of like, we're into this because we're bad kind of thing. And
yep.
I've never really thought like, oh, she was in love with him. It's like, nah, they kind of have a kinky thing going on here, and it's not really well defined. She was like, I thought he was in love with me. I'm like, what? You were in love with? Okay, I guess, sure. I gotta be honest, I kind of liked Mayday. I thought she was kind of interesting in this movie, but for a few reasons. One is her ability to dominate and intimidate Bond is just pretty interesting. Two, she has a very unique and strangely attractive look. And three, she doesn't say much. The third point is going to sound like a diss towards her, but actually it's to her benefit, because that gives her less and less reasons to sound really dumb because of the script of this movie. So because she doesn't say that much, she doesn't get too many bad lines in this movie. So that's on her end as well. I think she's interesting, and I think it's just disappointing that she's wasted in this movie. I guess that's my one knock on her, really.
And I think really most of my problems with her mostly stem from just the whole, like, I thought he loved me, and just all of a sudden conveniently changing sides to help Bond out. It was just like, yeah. I guess it's to make the plot work. This just seems so shoehorned.
Yeah, I mean, she probably would have been better off as Jaws from The Spy Who Loved Me, where she's just a consistent villain, and she maybe died, you don't know, because she's indestructible? I mean, you don't know, but... okay, whatever. I kind of agree with you there. I thought that was a little ham-fisted in there. Overall, I liked her, but, like, I like her because she's not Zorin, and I couldn't stand Zorin, so that's my feelings on that. All right, Zero, so the next one is the Bond girl, who is Stacey Sutton, played by Tanya Roberts.
She's got sort of the country girl vibe to her, kind of tomboyish in some aspects and kind of girly in others. You see her for a little bit in the beginning, and then she becomes more prominent towards the last third of the movie, I think it felt like. The way she sort of ties in is just she's got shares in her dad's old oil business and everything, and Zorin tried to pay her off and say, hey, I'll buy your shares for an inflated price just to buy you out. My offer is good until you decide either you want to shred the check up or you want to go ahead and just take the money. She kind of gets dragged into some misadventures, like Bond going, hey, let's check some things, and she gets roped into just fleeing the cops in a fire truck. With Bond swinging around on the ladder. I think she's a bit weak as a Bond girl. She kind of gets a bit chatty here and there. Just lots and lots of moments where she ends up being sort of like the damsel in distress, and Bond's got to kind of go out of his way to protect her and sort of set her up in a way that just she can sort of just stay out of harm's way until he takes care of whatever adversaries are coming at him and potentially harming her. She's kind of meh to me. Yeah, sure, she's kind of intelligent in a science-y geologist sort of way, but one big moment that Bond has with her is when he tries to meet her up to talk to her at her house, and she ends up being sort of like pushed away by Bond while he just hijacks the shotgun that she had in her hands and everything and tries to just sort of shoot the adversaries here and there.
About the fact that she's a geologist, I remember one of the big criticisms from The World Is Not Enough is that Denise Richards was not realistically believable, as I think she was also a scientist in that movie.
Yep, she was.
Okay, so I want to counter that with, at least she's not as unbelievable as Tanya Roberts was as Stacey Sutton in this, because I could not fucking stand this girl. Oh my God. So terrible. Like, she does two things. She yells, James! And then raps, and then... acts rather helpless. You got it pretty much right on the money. She's much more of a damsel in distress. And when she is actually helping in these scenes, she's also rather useless. I guess she's the comedy aspect of the action, especially during the chase scene with the fire truck. It was really annoying, and all she would do is scream, James! Like, oh my fucking God. Shut up. Good Lord. I got annoyed at first because I was like, oh man, she's barely in this movie. And then when she came back, I was like, oh man, I wish she'd go away. I was like, this is terrible. But here's the thing. I don't know if it's because her performance is so bad or if the writing is so bad. It might be a combination of the two, but like, this is just an annoying character and just a terrible performance. I'm going to lean it towards the writing because I don't think any actress could have really done anything other than to make her less and less annoying.
I think you kind of really just put it into words why just I kind of felt real meh on her just in the beginning. Just you don't see her very much. She doesn't say very much. She's kind of mysterious, and you're just like, oh, she's interesting. I wonder what she's got to do with this. And then last third of the movie where she's just in a lot of scenes, it's like, oh, jeez. God, why?
Make her stop.
Spy action. Some of the sequences are pretty interesting. Unfortunately, I don't think any of them really stand out in my mind because I'm trying to remember. I even went as far as rewatching the movie a couple days ago because I was like, I'm not sure anything stands out. And on a second watch, I'm just like, oh God, this is pretty bad. There isn't anything that's too standout.
I think
than maybe the chase through San Francisco on the fire truck, but that's about it.
I think nothing stands out because they lean too heavy into comedy. Like, nothing really seems like it has stakes to it because they rely too much on sight gags or ridiculous mechanisms to make anything interesting. Like, for example, one of the scenes where Zorin and Bond are having the race in the horse races, and there's all sorts of mechanisms going up and down and moving towards side to side with the horses and everything. I think they were trying to make that seem a little more dangerous, but it looked absolutely ridiculous. And then you mentioned also the chase in the San Francisco. Like, Stacy makes it annoying because of just how she is. But then the exciting parts are done comedically to a point where it's like, well, we know he's going to survive because we're meant to laugh at this. It's just goofy. It just doesn't have the excitement that you would expect from a Bond movie. Like, in all the action scenes are like this too, including the end with the blimp. It's all ridiculous. You're not meant to really take it seriously, so all the tension's gone.
I think you're probably onto something. With them leaning more into a comedy direction for this movie, it may have just watered down the spy action sequences. Anything that was sort of interesting on the spy and espionage end is diminished. And then the action scenes, because they lean too hard on just sort of the goofy comedy pieces, they don't have the impact that they should. I think you kind of put into words what I was thinking, and I just could not find the words for it.
I think another thing as well is Moore himself. He's too old, and it's less and less believable he's able to do all these things. Like, even carrying Stacy from the roof to the bottom, it was like, I don't buy that for a second. He would have broke his back by this point. And when he's hanging on the ladder or hanging off the rope at the end of the movie, I was like, no fucking way. Not happening. He's just too old, and that's another thing that I just couldn't get past in this. I think some people can look at the campiness and the humorousness of the movie and go, you're not supposed to take it seriously. It's like, okay, fine. If you can do that, great. But this is like the first Bond movie that I've had to do that with. And it really hurts the movie in the end when the comedy is not good, the performances are terrible, all you have is the action, and now because the comedy is so integrated in the action, it ruins the action. There's one scene that I kind of liked, and that's the ski scene in the beginning. But again, they go for the comedy bit because he hides inside of a submarine that looks like a glacier. Which at that
point, an iceberg, yeah.
Which at that point, if someone saw that going at the speed it was like, wait a minute, how is that glacier going so fast? You're not to take it seriously at all. And I guess you could say, like, if you enjoyed Moonraker, you might be okay with this, but I didn't like Moonraker at all, so there you go. Theme song opening credits. The theme song is A View to a Kill, written and composed by John Barry and Duran Duran, performed by Duran Duran.
God, what another banger. Oh my God.
Great song. Great. This is a really good one. I agree with you.
I had this one in my head, and I was just like, which movie is this from? And then, of course, when I popped this one in, I was like, oh shit, this is the movie? Oh my God, what another banger. It is always great to hear Duran Duran, and just here they are just headlining the Bond theme song. Ah, splendid stuff.
And it's got a distinct vibe, too. The theme song is great, full of energy, and really fits with the film. But the other thing that fits really well is the opening credits. It's got a distinct 80s neon vibe to it that's really distinct and different from the other films, which I really appreciate. Just the feel of the opening credits, and then the song as well fits with the rest of the film as well. I really like the song, full of energy. Definitely a top 5 for me in this one. Man, this is like the only thing I like about this film.
Yeah, the kind of UV reactive paint sort of stuff that they had on the dancers and stuff, absolutely just oozing with like 80s vaporwave vibes. I was like, oh God, so good. Yeah. Paired up with the song being performed by Duran Duran, nothing but exquisite perfection right there.
Yeah, really good. I really like that theme song. All right, Zero, conclusion.
I am going to have to say a mission failure, mostly because the more and more I think on it, the comedy just dilutes a lot of the stuff. And I think, unfortunately, they just went too far to that end. It's an entertaining movie, but if you were hoping for something kind of balanced, you know, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of spy and espionage action, it just seems so watered down by all the comedy pieces. And unfortunately, it makes this a bit of a weak movie. And then, of course, you've got the whole bit with Max Zorin starting off just kind of the shrewd businessman, and then all of a sudden just they try to explain away his psychopathic nature by going, oh yeah, he was a Nazi test tube baby. And then the psychopathy switch just it just gets flipped on so hard, and then he just gets really hammy with the psychopathy, and it's just like, alright, it's getting a little, like, Saturday morning cartoon corny, I guess. You could have dialed it back a bit, but I guess maybe this was Christopher Walken's way with dealing with the poor writing, like you mentioned. So, yeah. One of the other redeeming pieces is just the fact that you've got the fantastic intro song by Duran Duran with the fantastic opening sequence that oozes 80s style. Unfortunately, it's just kind of a weak movie overall.
Oh, it's definitely a weak movie. I think it's one of the weakest of all the Bond films. I gotta say, before I watched this movie, I had it seared into my brain, Die Another Day is the worst Bond movie. It is hands down the worst Bond movie. After I watched this, I was like, you know, this might be it. like this might be it. There's a debate there. I was like, ooh, this gets there. Easily the cheesiest, most eye-rolling adventure of James Bond. It is so bad. First off, Moore is too old. The villain's too campy. The Bond girl's too annoying. The action's too comedic, and it has no tension to it. It is not as entertaining. It is not funny, even though they go for the camp and the comedy really hard in this movie. I think it is one of the worst Bond movies. I'm just stunned by how bad this is. Oh, by the way, mission failure for me as well. Yeah, mission failure. I'm wondering if you know this. Do you know who was supposed to be the villain and who backed out?
No, I cannot remember.
David Bowie.
Whoa, that would have been interesting.
Yeah. David Bowie is supposed to be the original villain. He had to back out. You're going to laugh at this one. Do you know why there is a specific thing in the beginning of the movie about the Zorn Industries is not necessarily from an actual place? Do you know why they put that there?
Not offhand.
Okay, so this is interesting. So apparently, before pre-production, nobody did any research as to whether this company actually exists. Well, it turns out there was a Zorn Industries who also worked on Microchips. And when word came around that they're doing a movie based on a villain who is a Nazi test tube baby, who is a villain who runs Zorn Industries, who also makes Microchips, the guy sued the production of the movie to try and get stopped because it was going to damage his reputation.
Oh, sweet gravy.
That's why they had that disclaimer that this doesn't reflect the actual Zorn Industries. That right there was like, whoa, so this was fucked from the beginning because no one knew what they were doing. It was like, holy crap.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those situations, like, you'll see it in video games. They'll be like, all characters in this video game or movie or production are fictional. Any coincidences or similar names are just that, coincidences.
Right.
And stuff like that. So, right. So yeah, it was kind of funny because, like, through most of the Bond movies, I'd never seen any sort of, like, prominent warning like that. And then here we are with this one starting up. I'm like, whoa. Okay, that's interesting. I've seen that kind of a warning in front of, like, a video game, like, great contemporary example would be Persona 5. Like, Persona 5 has that warning where it's just like, hey, this isn't based on any real Japanese schools, and any of these people in this game that may have a name very similar to a real life person is just purely coincidental. They have no relation to this game.
Yeah, a lot of movies nowadays have it at the end, but to have it so prominent before the movie even starts was like, okay, something happened. It's like, what happened? And when I read about it, I was like, oh my God, that is so dumb. Oh man. Mission failure?
Yeah, mission failure.
Okay, mission failure 4, A View to a Kill. Man, that's your second one, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So, mission failure 4, A View to a Kill. Now, if you want my full review on this movie, you can go to my website at imthewiz.com. You'll have my full written review right on the site, along with a link to the video that has this review that you've just listened to. All right, Zero, so we are heading towards a new Bond, and that is Timothy Dalton. And what is his first film that we're doing next week?
The Living Daylights from 1987.
That is right, The Living Daylights. Tune in next time where we review The Living Daylights. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapon Specialist Zero.
Talk to you guys next time. Bye.